Hello, and welcome to our program, the reading of the ARP magazine, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Kevin Altamirano, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the ARP magazine here on OWL Radio. Our first article today is the article from our editor, ARP editor. Drug price reform is here. Medicare can negotiate lower prices on our behalf. Here's what it'll mean for older Americans. This is written by Joanne Jenkins. Prescription drugs help people live longer and healthier lives, but they do no good if people can't afford to take them. That's been the awful reality for so many older Americans who have worked hard all their lives, only to scrimp and sacrifice in their later years to afford the drugs they need. Thanks to a new law passed in August, one I'm proud to say that ARP fought hard for, this fundamental unfairness is beginning to change. The new law will bring relief to the tens of millions of people now on Medicare and to the generations of Americans who will follow. Ultimately, most older Americans will count on the program to help lower the costs of their prescription medicines. That certainly includes people like 69-year-old Dennis Blaine of California. Dennis, a retiree, faced a $3,600 bill for a three-month supply of medicine to control his diabetes. Living on Social Security, he simply couldn't afford it. He was able to get the same drugs from Canada for $289. Something is very, very wrong, he told us, echoing the sentiment of so many Americans who are forced to pay the highest drug prices in the world. This is why ARP led the fight to require Medicare for the first time to use its enormous buying power to negotiate better prices with drug makers. This common sense reform is the centerpiece of the historic new law. The Department of Veterans Affairs has long negotiated to provide drug discounts for those who have served our country. Costco and Sam's Club use bulk purchasing every day to cut prices on everything from soup to TVs. The new law includes a special benefit for the 3.3 million Medicare recipients with diabetes who use insulin. Starting in 2023, it places a $35 monthly cap on insulin copayments. For Cheryl Kark, who lives in Ohio, this is the most welcome news. The 66-year-old retiree spends as much as $1,200 a month for her diabetes drugs. That's a financial hardship beyond belief, Kark said. More help is on the way. Starting in 2025, there will be a $2,000 yearly ceiling on out-of-pocket costs for Medicare drug plan members. This simple solution will provide peace of mind that the drugs we need to live long, healthy lives won't impoverish us. It would have helped Gretchen Van Zyl, 74, and her husband Peter. The costs of their 15 medications consumed 40% of their monthly income from Social Security and a small pension. To get by, they put off house repairs to their Georgia home, sold possessions, and paid for their prescriptions with credit cards. Peter even split his pills to save money and ultimately stopped taking his expensive heart medication. 2 months later, he suffered a stroke. On April 7th, he died. When we spoke to Gretchen, she told us that if the cap had been in place, quote, I don't think we would have felt like we were headed to the poorhouse, unquote. And perhaps it would have meant more time together in a retirement that they, like so many older Americans, worked their whole lives to enjoy. The new law is a big step forward, but it is only one step toward making sure all Americans can choose how they live as they age. ARP will continue fighting to make sure they can. You can count on us. Our first cover story from the ARP magazine is called Medical Breakthroughs That Are Changing Lives Now. So our first breakthrough is in regard to heart disease. And this breakthrough is called smart stethoscopes for early heart disease diagnosis. Charles Griggs eats healthily most of the time and plays golf and basketball whenever he can. Yet he's long had a nagging worry about his heart. As an athlete growing up, I always seemed to get tired first, he says. I wondered if I had a slight heart murmur. Last summer, Griggs, 61, a public relations professional from Jacksonville, Florida, participated in a health screening, and one tool the doctor had on hand was a smart stethoscope, which can detect the slightest of murmurs. Griggs' heart was fine, but several people screened that day showed signs of heart disease. 5 to 10% of people we have screened have some form of valvular heart disease or atrial fibrillation, says Antoine Keller, MD, a cardiothoracic surgeon and co-founder of HeartSense, a nonprofit project aimed at detecting heart disease and other risks in underserved populations. The stethoscope allows doctors to identify heart murmurs before they can be heard, he says. It changes the paradigm for early diagnosis. Heart valve disease affects 8.5 to 13.2% of adults over age 65, boosting their risk for heart failure, stroke, and blood clots as valve flaps thicken and stiffen with age, weakening the heart's ability to pump blood. Early diagnosis can improve a patient's prognosis, but conventional stethoscopes often miss it, so people have no warning. In a 2017 British study of 251 older adults with no cardiovascular symptoms, regular stethoscopes detected just 32% of early valve problems and only 4.3% of more serious cases. The smart stethoscope, called the Echo Duo, that's E-K-O, Duo, D-U-O, is a stethoscope plus electrocardiogram. Cleared by the Food and Drug Administration, it amplifies heart, lung, and other body sounds up to 32 times, performs a single-lead ECG, electrocardiogram, and analyzes the data on a smartphone app for subtle signs of heart disease, including heart murmurs and atrial fibrillation. The analysis uses machine learning algorithms developed with one of the world's largest repositories of clinically validated heart sounds, says co-founder and CEO Connor Landgraf. In studies, the Echo Duo detected murmurs 88% of the time and AFib 99% of the time. Smart stethoscopes like the Echo Duo could help close gaps in the diagnosis and treatment of patients from low-income, underserved, and rural communities, Keller says. African Americans, for example, are 54% less likely than white individuals to be referred to a specialist for heart valve problems and 14% less likely to have severely damaged heart valves replaced. Still, Keller points out, using smart stethoscopes to find these diseases is just one part of the larger solution. If you don't take care of your wellness, you'll have to take care of your illness. The next breakthrough involves cancer, a blood test that detects early cancers. Joyce Arde's cancer journey began with a shock, but just as surprising was how quickly it ended. Diagnosed with stage 1 Hodgkin's lymphoma after having an experimental blood test in 2020, she underwent short rounds of chemotherapy and radiation. Now, with no signs of cancer, she's back to cooking for dinner parties and visiting family. "I'm thrilled they found it earlier," says Arez, who's 76, and is a retired real estate broker from Canby, Oregon. Arez's early cancer was discovered with the Galleri Multi-Cancer Early Detection MCED test from the healthcare company Grail, G-R-A-I-L. Quote, her cancer had no symptoms, says her husband, Richard, 77. Her doctor said it would never have been found at such an early stage without the blood test, end quote. Gallery screens for more than 50 different cancers by searching a blood sample for tiny scraps of DNA cast off by cancer cells. While it's not yet approved by the FDA, it can be ordered by your healthcare provider under an FDA provision called laboratory-developed tests. The Gallery, G-A-L-L-E-R-I, test costs $949 and, unfortunately, is not yet covered by most insurance. A second type of MCED test, called One Test, sells for about $189 and looks for 20 or more cancer types. Other MCEDs are in development as cancer researchers and biotech entrepreneurs race to close a lethal gap. There are currently no reliable screening tests for more than 50% of deadly cancers. Quote, the earlier the stage, the more confined the cancer is, the better the outcomes with chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation, end quote, says radiation oncologist Naima Nabavizadeh, an associate professor at Oregon Health and Science University and principal investigator of a second stage of the prospective study ARES participated in. Despite that, today we have good screening tests for only a few types of cancers. The promise of early detection through MCEDs has stirred big hopes, but major questions remain. False positives, which also happen with mammograms and other cancer screening tests, can lead to expensive, invasive, and anxiety-provoking procedures, such as biopsies. So can test results that uncover non-threatening, slow-growing cancers that likely need no treatment. Nabavizadeh notes that a follow-up study of 20,000 midlife and older adults he is leading at the Oregon Health and Science University will look at an array of issues, such as false positives. Are we picking up cancers even earlier than PET, PET scans, or MRIs can find them, or are they truly false positives? It's still an active area of investigation. OHSU is considering opening a high-risk clinic, he says, to follow patients with puzzling results. Do early detection tests save more lives? The National Cancer Institute has set a goal to launch a study comparing MCED tests within 2 years. And our third breakthrough talks about lung health. Inhaler sensors that monitor your meds. Lisa Hall has landed in the emergency room at least once a year since childhood, gasping for breath with flare-ups of severe asthma and, more recently, COPD. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which is a progressive lung disease. When you can't breathe, it's like a snake squeezing your chest, she says. Last year, she began snapping bottle cap-sized Bluetooth sensors from Propeller Health onto her medication inhalers and was shocked to discover that she wasn't using some drugs correctly. I wasn't waiting 15 minutes between two medications for COPD, says Hall, or I wouldn't use my inhaler if I couldn't remember whether I already had. Now, she no longer worries about forgetting doses because a smartphone app linked to the sensors keeps track for her. At first, Hall admits, she thought the sensors might be, quote, just a gimmick, End quote. But she has not needed to visit the emergency room even once since she has started using the app to monitor her health. Propeller Health's FDA-cleared sensors join a wave of digital inhaler technology available for people with asthma, which affects about 8% of midlife and older adults, and COPD, which is the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S. Nearly a third of older adults currently miss doses on their inhaler schedule, and 74% use their inhalers improperly, according to studies. By helping people stay on track with controller drugs, digital technology could help reduce the need for bigger doses or additional medications. There are other sensors on the market that offer similar tracking and data sharing, but some are prescription only, such as CapMedic and Digihalers, sold for specific asthma medications by Teva Pharmaceuticals. Most require a smartphone for setup, although Propeller has an option that uses an internet-enabled hub that plugs into a wall outlet to track inhaler use and send data to your doctor, chosen caregivers, and a computer. Costs range from $80 to $100 or more. Hall, meanwhile, likes another app feature. It shows local weather and air quality information, warning her about factors that could trigger an asthma flare-up. Another cover story is an ARP special report, The War in Ukraine's Elders, and it's entitled Left Behind. Older Ukrainians, isolated, often poor, in bad health, and emotionally tied to their family homes, suffer in unique, terrible ways. The Lupinos family is no exception. The youngest are now refugees, and the elders are rooted to their crumbling house on the front line of the war. Their daughter, Tamara, is desperately trying to unite them all. And this story is written by Lily Hyde. There are two parts. I'm going to read part one in this episode, and I will read part two in the next episode of our ARP readings here on OWL Radio. Part one is called Tamara's Choice. Tamara Lupinos, a biologist by profession, lives alone in a one-room, ninth-floor apartment in an industrial city in southern Ukraine. Tamara, who is 64, is also a devoted mother, grandmother, and daughter who declined better-paying jobs elsewhere to live in Zaporizhzhia, a sprawling city full of Soviet-era buildings perched on the banks of the Dnieper River. "Here I'm close to work," she tells me when we meet near her apartment, "and just an hour's drive from my parents." Before February 24th, 2022, Tamara's life had been orderly, if difficult. Work had been stressful recently at the Botanical Research Institute, where she leads the marketing department. There had been COVID absences as well as a lack of funding. In late February 2022, Tamara, an attractive, well-groomed woman with glittery sneakers and a warm, lively manner, was herself still recovering from a long, difficult bout of COVID and a back injury that made it harder than ever to climb the stairs to her ninth-floor apartment. Still, each day started joyfully with a check-in call to her parents in the nearby town of Orakiv. Usually, it was her mother, Halnya, 87, who picked up the phone to share her news, as well as updates on Tamara's father, Mykola, who is 92, who had survived cancer and two strokes. For Tamara, this was the first of several calls she would make to them each day before they all went to sleep. There were calls to her daughter, Anastasia, who is 28. Tamara is not only the sole caregiver for her aging parents, but a doting grandmother and also a continuing source of emotional support for her daughter, who was then raising her own daughter, 4-year-old Kira, with husband Dimitro, 36, in an apartment on the southern fringes of the city. At 6 a.m. on February 24th, everything changed. Tamara's phone rang. Her daughter, in a panic, blurted out, "Mom, the war started. They're already here. Melitopol is on fire. We're coming to you." Tamara was stunned. War? She had paid scant attention to the reports of Russian troops massing on Ukraine's borders or to warnings from the United States that a full-scale invasion was imminent. She wasn't alone. Ukrainian authorities had made few preparations for defense or evacuation, certain that Russia would not venture beyond eastern Ukraine, where a deadly conflict had been simmering for 8 years. But now missiles were falling all over Ukraine. Russia had launched air and ground attacks from the north, south, and east, killing civilians and and destroying infrastructure. By a terrible twist of fate, four generations of the Lupinos family were caught in the middle of this onslaught. Anastasia lived across the river from her mom near the road to Melitopol, some 70 miles south, where there were Russian tanks in the streets. And Tamara's parents lived in Orykiv, a small town on the road to Mariupol, where the world would watch unspeakable devastation unfold in the weeks ahead. Anastasia and her family arrived at Tamara's tiny one-room flat just hours after the Russian invasion began. The elevator was out of order, as usual, so the young couple trudged up the stairs, hauling cases of bottled water. Tamara tried to soothe Kira and answer her questions, but nobody had any answers. That night, the children, as Tamara calls her daughter's family, took turns on guard duty so they would alert the others in case of shelling. When the air raid sirens wailed their warnings, Tamara could not make it down 9 floors into the basement of the school opposite her building. Instead, she spent the first of many long nights of the war sheltering in the bathroom. The early nightmare days of the invasion unspooled with terrifying speed. By March 1st, Russian forces had surrounded Mariupol and were 25 miles from the Lupinos family home in Orykiv. Cut off from food and medical supplies, Orykiv, it seemed, would be the next town to fall. Instead, it held out, and Ukrainian forces dug in, forming a front line just south of town across agricultural land dotted with historic villages. Then the bombardment commenced. Over the next weeks, those who could get away, largely younger people with children, fled on dangerous highway H08 north to Zaporizhia. Most of the older residents, Halina and Mykolai Lupinos among them, stayed behind. In a war that forces brutal choices, Tamara Lupinos was caught between saving her parents or her children. Her parents, in fragile health, needed her more, but it was now increasingly perilous to get to them. And where would they all go? Her daughter's family was already staying in her 9th-floor apartment in a city that was being hit sporadically by missiles. It was constant stress, sirens, sleeping in our clothes, Tamara recalls, and I was with my granddaughter all the time. Meanwhile, she called her parents every morning. I asked them so many times to leave. Still, she knew they wouldn't. They were tied to their home. Tamara's brother is buried in Orykiv. Her father, infirm, couldn't travel. Safety and comfort elsewhere seemed questionable at best. My mother tells me, I understand how much you worry, but there he'll be stuck in one room, and here he can go out and breathe the fresh air, trees, flowers. It's clearly a conversation Tamara has had with her mother and with herself many times. What can be done? She repeats. What? For 2 months after the front line reached Orykiv, Highway 08, the road between Tamara and her parents, it was impassable. It ran through deadly crossfire as Russian forces attempted to cut off the Ukrainian army and advance on Zaporizhia. Tamara could not risk visiting her parents or organizing a car to bring them to her. They still spoke several times daily if the phone connection worked. Relatives and neighbors who had remained in Orkiv kept an eye on the older couple, as did local social service workers and volunteers. But for Tamara, this was excruciating. "Day and night, I feared for my parents," she says. "I still wake up in the morning sometimes and think, no, this is all a terrible dream." Halina continued to play down her own difficulties, worrying more about the rest of the family, including Tamara's aunt, proud and staunchly pro-Ukrainian, who lived in the nearby city of Kherson, which was now occupied by Russian forces. Every morning when Tamara called, before she could even speak, her mother would ask three questions. "How are you? How are the children? What about Kherson?" Only afterward would she speak about herself, says Tamara. In April, Tamara's daughter, son-in-law, and granddaughter left for Western Ukraine, the safest area of the country. They had tried to get Tamara to go with them. She refused. It was too far from her parents. "When my mother found out the children had left and I stayed, she cried for 3 days," Tamara tells me over a cup of coffee that she forgets to drink. She's so caught up in the painful drama of her family in wartime. "My mother said, 'Why didn't you go? The children need you. We're already old. We need you to take care of yourself.' Tears everywhere, and my daughter too. 'Why didn't you come with us?'" On May 1st, Orkiv was hit by a heavy wave of Russian shelling. Tamara's niece called, crying. Her building had been hit, and she could see bodies from her balcony. Then Tamara got a call from her parents' neighbor. "When did you last speak to your parents?" the neighbor asked. "Call them." I said, "Something terrible has happened to my niece." And he said, "No, no, call your parents. Their house has been hit." I will continue with part two of that article in our next ARP reading. And to close up today, just a quick article, actually just some bullets, in the upfront eat section of ARP. And that's called Seven Surprising Uses for Carrots. Number one, salad dressing. Blend carrots with ginger, rice, vinegar, olive oil, garlic, and toasted sesame oil for a zesty salad topper. Number two, tacos. Toss chopped carrots with oil and chili powder. Roast until caramelized. Pile into tacos with avocado, radishes, cilantro, and sour cream. Yum. Waffles. Add a half to 1 cup shredded carrots to your favorite waffle recipe or mix. Four, bacon. Use a vegetable peeler to create long, thin slices. Mix soy sauce, garlic powder, smoked paprika, olive oil, and a little maple syrup. Brush on. Air fry at 350 degrees for 10 minutes. And how about energy bites? In a food processor, combine carrots, walnuts, dates, nutmeg, vanilla, cinnamon, and a pinch of salt until well blended. Roll into balls, no cooking needed. Yum. Well, everybody, you have been listening to the reading of this month's edition of ARP Magazine here on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed at 9 o'clock p.m. this evening. This is Kevin Altamirano saying goodbye from Owl Radio.